Welcome to Menopause Rescue. I'm Dr. Polly Watson. Midlife women are often caught up in a sea of symptoms. Too often, they're overwhelmed by the lack of support from mainstream healthcare. They're inundated with so-called experts who are selling solutions which may lack credibility. I'm a Menopause Society certified gynecologist with both traditional and functional medicine training. I'm here to guide you through this transition and help you decipher the facts from the fads. Armed with credible information, I hope you are empowered to rescue and restore your health, making the second half of your life your best. Welcome to Menopause Rescue. I'm Dr. Polly Watson. I'm so excited to have with me today Kate Willis. Kate is a nurse practitioner who is certified in functional medicine from the Institute for Functional Medicine, an important part of our team here at Hormone Wellness. Kate has just led a group called Glucose Insight, and I'm so excited to have her on today so she can share with us her expertise on glucose control and how it relates to hormonal health. So Kate, let's just dive right in. Why is glucose control so important for our health?
Glucose impacts everything. We have glucose receptors all over our body, and so our blood sugar levels or our glucose levels impact how we feel and also how we stay healthy as we age. When I think about glucose, I think about things like fatigue and energy regulation. I think about sleep and mood, mental clarity, joint pain, and inflammation. And then I think about things more in the long term. So long-term health, which is really important to women at all stages of their life, but especially as we enter midlife. Things like metabolic health, risk for cancer, risk for heart disease, risk for neurocognitive disorders like Alzheimer's disease and autoimmune disease. So glucose is important now in how we feel today. It's also important in how we age and what our risk for future disease looks like.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up some of these longer term things like dementia and Alzheimer's disease, because so often we feel like we're sort of trapped in our family history and there's nothing we can do. But you're letting us know today that there really are things we can do to change the trajectory of our health futures. So that's awesome.
Absolutely. And one of this tool that we're using, we're going to be talking about this throughout this conversation, but we're talking about looking at blood glucose levels through a continuous glucose monitor, which is a small little device that we can wear on the back of our arm to monitor our blood sugar levels. And it's not really meant necessarily to be a permanent or long-term solution, but a tool that we're using to get an understanding of what our own blood glucose levels are doing. So it's a great way to get some real data and information.
So along those lines, when we're thinking about glucose and health, probably a term that a lot of our listeners have heard is insulin resistance. But they may not be super clear on what that means or how using a CGM could help them determine if they had insulin resistance. So I'd love it if you could explain that for everybody.
Sure. So insulin is a hormone that's made by our pancreas. It is an important hormone. When we think insulin resistant, sometimes that makes us think that insulin is a bad thing. It certainly is not. It is what helps regulate our blood sugar levels. But insulin resistance is the state in which our body becomes less responsive to insulin's effect. Essentially, we need more insulin to get glucose into cells, which is the job of insulin. Sometimes we can, you know, think of insulin like a key. So insulin is the key that unlocks the cell to move glucose in. With insulin resistance, what's happening is we need more keys to open the cells to get glucose in. You might say, why is this a problem? If we're still getting glucose into cells, what's wrong with that? Essentially, our pancreas is having to do more work. It's having to pump out more insulin to get glucose into our cells. Over time, this can lead to pancreatic insufficiency. High levels of insulin are also inflammatory, and they can contribute to weight gain. It's an early sign of metabolic dysfunction. So this is one of the first signals that something is wrong metabolically in our bodies. It's often associated with elevated triglycerides and in and of itself can be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So we do not want to develop insulin resistance. One of the things that happens during perimenopause and menopause is we tend to develop some relative insulin resistance. This does not mean that every woman who is going through menopause will develop type 2 diabetes or need medication, but it does mean that we will have a shift in the way that our bodies handle carbohydrates. And it does mean that we may need to make some changes in our lifestyle or our diets or the way we exercise to really support being insulin sensitive.
So I think we hear this so much in with patients in the office, and you know, women will say, I hit my mid 40s, I put on 15 pounds, I didn't change anything. And so sometimes this insulin resistance is the thing that changes, right? Because if we, those little insulin keys can't get the glucose into the cell, the glucose levels in the blood rise, just like you're talking about. And then that excess energy turns into fat and it goes on our middle and we lose our waist. So I think this is so important to get clear for people. So thanks for that. I think that little key is a great image for everyone to hold on to.
Yes. Insulin actually inhibits the breakdown of fat. And so when, you know, if we're snacking a lot and having high blood sugar levels every time we snack or eat, if we're eating high carbohydrate foods and our overall insulin levels are high, then that is absolutely one of the reasons that women at all stages of their life, but particularly in this phase of life and midlife, may have trouble losing weight.
You know, sometimes people, we hear this a lot when folks come in, particularly come from maybe their regular primary care, and we'll often get hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of glucose control over the last 3 months. And let's say the upper limit of normal is 5.6 and diabetes is over 6.4 and they come in at 5.7 and I'm like, whoa, we got to do something about this. And they're like, my primary care is so not worried about this. I'm not diabetic yet. So I'd love it if you could talk about why we want to optimize glucose control rather than just not be diabetic.
I always tell my patients that metabolic health is a continuum. We do not wake up one day with type 2 diabetes. It isn't something that happens all of a sudden. Insulin resistance, what we just discussed, is usually the first thing to develop. And there have been studies that show that fasting insulin, which is one of the markers we use to evaluate for insulin resistance, that fasting insulin can go up 10 years or more before there are significant changes in blood glucose levels. So when we see someone come in with a hemoglobin A1C that is in that pre-diabetic range, that can actually indicate that they are moving forward on the continuum of metabolic dysfunction. So in one sense, working on glucose regulation before we develop pre-diabetes or diabetes is really the best time to start paying attention to our blood sugar levels. Second, the ups and downs that we have in our blood glucose levels impact how we feel today. And I mentioned this, it impacts how we feel and also our risk for future disease. I think about how blood sugar impacts a person's energy, their mood, their mental clarity. When we're having a lot of ups and downs with blood glucose levels, a CGM can be a great tool to clue us into why we may feel tired at certain times of the day. I have patients that say, I really get a slump after lunch. Mm-hmm. And we look at their glucose monitor and their blood sugar goes high after their high carb lunch and then crashes around the time they're feeling tired. I've also seen instances where elevated levels in the evening can lead to poor sleep at night. Mm-hmm. I've also seen instances where we see high levels at night and that may suggest a sleep disorder or that something's going on that's disrupting sleep. Could be hot flashes, could be sleep apnea, just to name a few. Elevated glucose and elevated insulin that comes with it also promotes inflammation. And so we may suffer the effects of inflammation in our joints or in our brain, and we may generally not feel as well as we could. Also, and I have mentioned this, dysregulated glucose sets us up for long-term disease. It sets us up for metabolic disease like diabetes. It sets us up for cardiovascular disease, potentially cognitive decline, and autoimmune diseases, and potentially cancer. You know, again, this is thinking about how we feel now. This is helpful for making us feel our best right now, but it's also helpful for helping prevent disease in the future.
And I just wanted to add, I think you're so right. We often hear that post-lunch fatigue. I think another thing we hear a lot at midlife is anxiety. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's so hard to figure out what of this is societal. What of this is maybe having elderly parents that need extra time and resources, or kids that are trying to launch that are having their own struggles? And then what of that is physiologic and not societal or not social, even though it's all connected, right? And so I think that CGM can be really helpful, because when those blood sugar levels are really erratic, that's also such a trigger for your mood to feel really unstable, right?
Absolutely.
I know you've just done this class, and it was kind of cool. It was a neat to do a group experience, let everybody share their CGM results together and kind of learn from each other. So I'd love it if you could share some insights that, you know, you were able to clarify for the people who went through that class, and that other people who might choose to use a CGM could really benefit from.
It was such a fun class to do, and I felt like the learning that we had from each other was fantastic. You know, everyone's at a different place metabolically, and that is okay. We're part of what we're doing with the CGM is using it as a tool to figure out where are we. We're not making a moral judgment on how healthy we are. We're just investigating and learning how to live better. So one of the things that we can see is directly is how food impacts our blood glucose levels. So that's one of the biggest influences on our blood sugar. I have seen people who maybe they've been eating oatmeal and fruit for breakfast every morning for the past 30 years, and they have felt like it's a good breakfast for them. But then they put on a continuous glucose monitor, and you know, they've transitioned into menopause, and they realize that that carbohydrate load without a lot of protein or fat is really causing their blood sugar to spike through the roof. So they learn that that choice they thought was so healthy may actually be not benefiting them in terms of their long-term health or even how they feel today. So I love letting patients experiment with different foods and see what carbohydrates are doing, you know, when we eat a carbohydrate by itself or when we combine a whole food carbohydrate with healthy protein and fiber, it makes a big difference. I think for some people too, they may know that they're eating foods that are not the best for their health. But to be able to see in real time what food is doing to your blood sugar level is very powerful. And I think that data helps inform change and helps fuel change for many people. Another insight I'm often, when I'm seeing patients, counseling them, encouraging them to put more fiber in their diets, especially for women that are in perimenopause or have gone through menopause. Fiber has so many benefits, including the microbiome, impacting cholesterol levels, impacting weight in a positive way. But I love using fiber along with the CGM, because I think when patients add in fiber or make a specific choice to add fiber towards the beginning of a meal, they're able to see how that impacts their glucose response. It encourages them to continue that healthy habit. I mentioned sleep disorders and how that often affects blood glucose levels at night. I've had a few patients who discovered they had blood glucose dysregulation at night. So not in the presence of food, but when they should be, you know, sleeping and not, you know, having spikes in their blood sugar. So that's helped us think about how to explore, you know, what's going on at night. Is it hot flashes? Is it sleep apnea? Is there something else going on? For people who are working out and maybe working out intensely, I think it's really interesting for them to see how well-fueled they are for their workouts. I think it helps them understand if they need to fuel differently, perhaps add some whole food carbohydrates either before or after a workout. So that can be really helpful for folks who are active to understand proper fueling. Another insight is if that midday hunger, you know, the hunger that comes in the middle of the afternoon, if that's related to a physiologic change, is it related to a blood sugar that is going down? Or is it related to hunger or just a habit to have a snack?
I love this idea of being able to look at in real time what our food is doing to us. And I think, you know, you've mentioned kind of whole food carbohydrates several times. You know, we're thinking about quinoa or a sweet potato or black rice or, you know, something that's got a little fiber in it, maybe some beans. And that maybe it's not that, particularly if you're exercising a lot, you may need carbs. I think sometimes we talk about midlife and everybody's like going keto. And if we're under a lot of stress, be it exercise stress, be it psychosocial stress, be it hormonal stress, we might need some carbs. But a CGM can really help you identify which carbs don't spike your blood sugar. So instead of your food, your food choice window kind of getting narrower and narrower, this really can be a way to figure out what are the foods that really work well for me. And I just want to kind of put that out there because I feel like so much of the time we're in this restrict more mindset, and really getting that real time data can help open things up for some people.
Absolutely. And that's fun to see people enjoying foods, whole foods that they thought maybe weren't the best for them. Maybe they're more supportive than they originally thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I can tolerate like black-eyed peas don't really spike my blood sugar, but I still get that starchy, carby deliciousness without a big spike and a crash afterwards. That fermented buckwheat bread, that pachu bread, mm-hmm. that doesn't spike me at all. Are there other things that you found that are like high quality carbohydrates that don't really bump your sugar?
So often it's, for me, it's combining those carbohydrates, making sure I'm having a fat source. So if I have mm-hmm. a sweet potato, it's making sure that there's butter or mm-hmm. olive oil on that sweet potato and eating it with a protein. That's been the biggest insight personally for me, is how much, you know, adding some fat and fiber to those carb sources really changes my blood sugar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a common thing we see, right? When we're tired, it's that 4 o'clock. People often will grab a carb in isolation, which is the absolute worst thing they could do, right? Because then they're going to go up and then they're just going to come right back down again. And then they're going to be that much more irritable when they finish their workday shift. And then they have to go home and do the parenting shift and all the second job, right?
Absolutely. I had a night when I made sweet potato chips in the air fryer and I was making several batches and eating them in between. And I looked at my blood sugar and it shot way up because those chips were just a carb, even though they were a sweet potato. And I felt tired that night and cranky and hungry. And so it was nice to be able to see that there was a physiologic reason that I felt that way. So I think there's just lots of information we can gain when we use these tools.
Absolutely. You know, we're both specialists in women's health. And so we see women, a lot of midlife, perimenopausal, menopausal women, but we also see women who have PCOS and some other hormonal conditions. So can you kind of talk about some patient scenarios when you would recommend a CGM?
Absolutely. These are inexpensive and they're low risk. And so I think that makes them a great tool to use with a lot of patients. There's very little risk of harm in using them and usually a lot of benefit. So certainly I think about women who are struggling with their weight, women who are struggling with things like PCOS in terms of, you know, we know there's often some insulin resistance that is going along with PCOS. For people who are having trouble identifying what to eat, what nutrition plan works for them, I mean, the blood sugar is not the only thing we look at when we're choosing a food plan or choosing nutrition, but it certainly is part of the equation. And so I think it's helpful to, you know, give people a tool to use to help navigate their food choices. When I see people come in whose hemoglobin A1Cs are near the top of the normal limit, close to prediabetes, or in that prediabetic range. So just as a refresher for anyone who can't remember, doesn't know, the hemoglobin A1C is a 90-day average of our blood sugar. And so if our average blood sugar is on the high side, a continuous glucose monitor can help us understand why. Is this a nighttime issue? Is it a food issue? Is it because someone eats high carbohydrate snacks or meals 6 times a day? What's the reason for the elevated blood sugar levels? You know, I think women that are in these hormonal shifts of perimenopause and menopause are great candidates for a trial of a glucose monitor. I'll have women who wear it for 2 weeks and get fantastic insights. We know that women are having a shift in insulin sensitivity during this time and are tending to develop some insulin resistance. So I think as we're navigating these hormonal changes and trying to figure out what's the best way for me to exercise and eat and support my health going forward, this can be a really nice tool to see in real time what's going on with blood sugar levels, even if an individual isn't struggling with weight or a high hemoglobin A1C. They can be a really great tool.
Absolutely. We're focused on health optimization. And so let's not wait necessarily until there's a problem or a disease. We're trying to optimize where we're at right now. I love everything you said. I wanted to add one thing just to kind of connect the dots for a few people. So we mentioned sleep disorders. So if someone has sleep apnea, they are not getting enough oxygen at night and they have high cortisol, and cortisol is going to promote insulin resistance. Cortisol is stress hormone. So another thing that we're often talking about with folks is it's not always what's on their plate, but their mood and their state of mind. And so I remember I hadn't set an appropriate boundary with somebody and they were really pushing my buttons. And I sat down and ate the same chicken and vegetable meal that I had eaten a million times again. And I shot up to over 250, which is really unusual for me. And it was because I was pissed off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oftentimes when we're having people track their food and their sugar, we're also looking at their sleep, their mood, because cortisol can do that, cause more insulin resistance, and then make those numbers look really, really out of line with what we thought we ate, right?
Absolutely. And I've had patients who are fasting in the morning, drinking a cup of coffee, going to do an intense workout. And so in the absence of food or calories, they are also spiking their blood sugar up a lot. And so You're absolutely right. Cortisol is an important hormone to consider when we're thinking about blood sugar levels, because, you know, we don't have to eat food to have our cortisol spike. You know, there can be, you know, caffeine can make our cortisol go up a bit. Intense exercise, fasting, which is a stress. Maybe we're under a lot of stress at work or at home. And so I think taking into account what else is going on in someone's life, you know, in addition to food, that may be causing those blood sugar spikes. So thanks so much for bringing that up.
I just want to clarify for a couple of folks with the intense exercise, it could be the cortisol if the workout is really tough. But if you've exercised in a fasted state, there's no blood sugar to draw energy from. So you may be reaching towards your liver where you have stored glucagon in your liver, and you're mobilizing those stored glucose reserves from your liver, and your blood sugar goes up that way. So just to kind of clarify, like if you're getting these huge spikes every time you exercise, maybe you need to eat a little something before you work out to minimize that spike. Yeah, this has been so great. Any other closing thoughts for people with CGM?
These are great, easy to use tools. You navigate them with a small disc that goes into the back of your arm and then an app on your phone. So they're not intimidating to use. They don't have to be used long-term to get good information. And it can really be life-changing, I think, for people to understand their bodies in new ways. These are tools that I love to use.
I also love that it's sort of putting the patient back in the driver's seat, right? Let's give some, this midlife can feel like such a destabilizing time where we feel like we're losing control. And so here's some information. Let's help you make more informed decisions, put you back in control of your health. So thank you, Absolutely. Kate, for doing such a great job with the Glucose Insight class and for sharing your feedback after doing that great class with everybody. This has been fantastic.
Great. Thanks for talking. It was fun.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Menopause Rescue. If you're looking for a menopause expert and live in North Carolina, take our free online class and see if we're a match for your needs. It's called Are We a Good Fit? And is a quick and easy way to learn more about our practice and what it has to offer.
Hey, this is Dr. Watson. This is just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No doctor-patient relationship is formed, and any information you get from this podcast is considered educational only. You should make medical decisions with your healthcare provider. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition, and they should seek assistance from their healthcare professionals.